Well, hello everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to another episode for the Front Row Network. We are here today to not talk about the Oscars. We are officially done. We are rolling into our regular episodes, and we have a very special episode of the Front Row Network tonight. We are going to have a crossover episode. I am your host of Flashbacks. I'm Ryan Lutens, and with me tonight is...
the host of Guilty Pleasures, Lou Hare. Welcome. And in case you're listening to this on the Guilty Pleasures feed, I have not been replaced by Ryan. that's a work in progress. We'll see. Who knows?
And also tonight is with us is
Aaron McCabe. I currently don't host anything, as we just talked about, but I've got a plethora of opinions on several podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I am so excited to be here and talk about Tremors, one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm. I think when you're on as many podcasts as you're on, Aaron, you don't necessarily need to host. You're just ubiquitous, you know? Like, Michael Caine doesn't star in movies, but he's in like 1,000 of them. So you're the Michael Caine of this podcast group.
Like if we were directors, you'd be our one actor that we'd come back into every show.
Mm-hmm. I'm honored by this. And I will accept it.
Well, tonight we are crossing over with Guilty Pleasures. If you're listening to the Flashback channel, this is not a guilty pleasure. It's both, because we are talking about a flashback of a 1990 movie released January 19th of 1990. But later the franchise kind of evolved into a guilty pleasure. But this movie in and of itself, the movie that we're talking about first, Tremors, is a guilty pleasure. While a good movie, it is still a guilty pleasure. But per Flashback, I got to do the thing that Scott started. You know, somewhere between Footloose and Mystic River, there are decades of movies that define generations. For some, they are classic, and to others, they are flashbacks. And we are flashbacking on a great Kevin Bacon movie, Tremors. Tremors is a movie that was released in 1990, just celebrated its 30th anniversary. It was written by S.S. Wilson and Brett Maddock. They're the guys that did Short Circuit and Batteries Not Included. It was also directed by Ron Underwood, who helmed such movies as City Slickers and Mighty Joe Young. These three got together and gave us a great monster comedy in Tremors. This is a film that tells the story of our favorite Valentine or Val, played by Kevin Bacon, and his trusty partner in crime, Earl Bassett, who is played by Fred Ward. These two gentlemen are the Town of Perfection's handymen, and they live their lives doing whatever these people, 14 in fact, there's only 14 people that live in Perfection. They do the mundane tasks for these people, and one day they decide to pack up and leave. They're sick of it, they're done, and so they drive out of town. And as they're driving out of town, they discover a dead body. So they take it back, do the nice thing, like, all right, let's get back on the road. And as they're back on the road, they discover another dead body. And as they're like, okay, there's something going on, they come back and like, let's get out of here. They try for the third and final time to leave when there's a rock slide. This is the only road in and out of town, so they are stuck. So Earl and Val soon discover that there's something underneath the sand that's causing this problem. It's not a serial killer. And with the help of geology student and seismologist Rhonda, they soon uncover the find of the century: subterranean worms that eat people with tentacles that shoot out of their mouth. So now Earl and Val must save the Town of Perfection in this nice little valley that's perfect for the movie setup. And we have a great horror comedy as everything unfolds, from great special effects to timely dialogue. This is a movie that is definitely a flashback. So, guys, I just want to start it off. I just want to know your first thoughts of remembering when you first saw Tremors. That's what we do here at Flashbacks. I want your first thoughts of remembering Flashbacks. So, Lou, go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
This was a home video staple for me. I remember renting this probably as soon as it came out on video, because I didn't see it in the theater. Not a lot of people saw this movie in the theater, by the way. No. It does not make a lot of money. It makes $16 million off a $11 million budget. So it's marginally profitable, but it comes out later that year. And this was one of those things. I was at the perfect age for this to be like the go-to movie for like sleepovers. This would get shown a lot because like it was kind of scary, but it wasn't like slasher gore like Friday the 13th, and it was PG-13, so it was like, okay, kind of safe. But yeah, no, I saw this movie, and then it came time for its cable run, and I don't know how many times I would see it on and on, and I would just, you know, of course you're going to watch it. Tremors is on, you're going to watch it. So I've probably seen this movie in bits and pieces more times than I can count.
Aaron, what are your thoughts? I know we had talked about this before Lude got on. What are your first memories of watching Tremors?
So same with Lou. This was a huge staple in my house. And I think mainly because I would disappear into my basement and watch a movie on repeat into oblivion. So my parents could very easily get whatever they needed to do done because I was downstairs completely immersed in whatever I was watching. So I was explaining to Ryan, you know, me being the strange little girl that I was at age 5, when we'd go to the video store every weekend, I'd ask for War of the Worlds. And so when Tremors, of course we didn't see it in the theater. I don't remember if this was a movie that I saw. I'd also, as a weird little girl, watch the Weather Channel and pay-per-view over and over and over again. And like the trailers. So like this could have very easily been something I saw on the trailers on repeat for pay-per-view to order that I eventually found in the video store. It could have been on HBO because we did have that and I saw it and then decided to continuously rent it at the video store. But this movie had a long run for 8-year-old Aaron in every weekend of going, what do you want at the video store? And me being like, Tremors. No, really? You don't want anything else? Nope, Tremors. Okay.
No, yeah. I used to love that. It used to be a challenge when you'd rent something from the video store and you had that 3-day window. How many times can I watch this movie before I have to turn it back in?
Yes.
It's like an unwritten challenge.
It is. It's just like, oh, I only have this for so many days. Who knows if I'll ever get to see it again.
And like you had to get through the credits for it to be real.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some standards.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. So true. Kids out there listening, millennials, I'm sad for you that you haven't really been able to understand what it's like to walk into a personally owned, like small business movie store or a Blockbuster, because those were some times.
I used to work at Blockbuster and I lived and died by the movie store back in the day. We had Hogan's Video up here, Lou. Mm-hmm. And then we had Hilltop Video. I mean, I just remember, I was a movie kid even back then, and I can just remember going there. But for me, my first experience with Tremor was definitely on TV. TNT and TBS would always show it on Saturdays and Sundays. And I remember watching it, and all the good stuff more or less was cut out. This was a different time. But I remember being able to finally get it from Blockbuster, and it was VHS. And watching it when I was about 7 or 8. You know, and it just, for me being a kid, I love monster movies, and this was like one of the perfect ones because it was just so good. You know, and I guess that kind of segues into our thoughts about this movie. This is where we break down the movie, as a whole. This is where we share all the stuff that we liked and just have the giant conversation as a whole. And for me, I'll start off by saying I really liked the movie, as a kid, because it kind of reflected a movie that's my favorite of all time, and that's Jaws. You know, a movie that just is very straightforward, and it tells a tale. You don't see the creature right away. It's definitely a slow burn to the fact that, you know, you are vested in these characters. And then when you see the monster, then it just becomes even more fun. But I really enjoyed how the story was told, the character development, which is, you know, for a 90s monster comedy, there was actually some decent character development in this film. But yeah, for me, it was just, I liked it because it almost played like Jaws, but without water, it's dirt. So, Aaron, what are your thoughts?
Okay. So just so all the listeners know, this weekend I went on a girls trip. I'm 37. I went on a girls trip, and let it be known, the weird little girl has not gone anywhere. I took myself down to the hot tub at the house we rented and sat in the hot tub by myself and watched Tremors. So, and it was glorious. I had so much fun. This movie held tension exactly where I remember it holding tension. I loved the special effects. It's like pre-CGI where you're working with puppets, gelatin, corn syrup. It's the banter is wonderful. And I think that, you know, Earl and Val are like the original, like, horror movie romance. Like, they're great. And what really did it for me, what I love the most about this movie is I think as a weird, like, brunette girl, you know, who was super into science, super nerdy, super into things, I had here in this movie, which wasn't very common in the 90s, a heroine who had brown hair like me, wavy hair like me, was into science like me, and was totally like, I mean, they were relying on her in the movie to get them through this and turning to her and be like, what do you think? You know about this. And I loved that. Like, I realized watching it that I, like, her and Reba McEntire's character, Heather, I was like, these are two badass women, and I'm here for it.
Lou, what are your thoughts on the movie? Like, just break it down.
Well, you know, it won't be nearly as profound as what Aaron brought to the table, but watching this again, because this was the first time I'd sat and watched this movie in years, even though I probably, you know, I didn't really need to watch it for this, but you know, it was a joy to do so. But what struck me, I think, about it, of what the appeal, I think, was, at least to kids who watched it, and maybe even still, is it invokes one of the best children's games of all time, and that's The Floor is Lava.
Yes.
You know, the concept of this movie is that, you know, you can't walk on the ground because they feed off of vibrations. So they're like jumping from rock to rock. They're jumping off of buildings. They're figuring out any way that they cannot touch the ground. And like, what kid growing up, and maybe, I don't know if kids still do that. I don't know. Still play that game where it's like, okay, I'm going to try to jump from this couch to this couch and there and just pretend that the floor is lava. And in this case, the floor has subterranean monsters. So it, like, that's, I think there's like that kind of childlike quality that the movie has to go up with what you were saying, Aaron, like the humor of it. It's very, this was supposed to be released in 1989. It's very buddy cop. It's, you know, the banter and all of that sort of stuff is there, with a mix of like a, also kind of a 50s horror monster movie, like a B movie. So it's like, but it's also got, you know, Kevin Bacon, who's this great actor and a great cast and all of these people just kind of seemingly having a ball. But yeah, there's just like, I think there's just maybe that childlike quality to it that I think just works every time.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant.
You know, and Aaron, you'd mentioned like,
that's what I'm here for.
One of you guys mentioned like the whole buddy cop aspect. And to me, it almost, you know, just thinking about it now, it reminds me of Tucker and Dale versus Evil, you know, two guys, two redneck guys who are just thrown into a situation and just, you know, make the most of it and save the day. That's, you know, thinking about that, that's exactly what Val and Earl did. These are two guys that, you know, are just sick and tired of being on the bottom rung of the totem pole. You know, they're doing the jobs, they're basically being taken advantage of. And they finally decide to do something with their lives. And, you know, it's funny, like when they're leaving town for the first time, they're like, we said no to free beer. Like, that just embodies everything that they're all about. So let's just talk about, you know, the characters. Lou, I'm going to leave it up to you because I want you to talk about your, what I'm assuming is your favorite. Go ahead. Characters.
Well, I mean, there's a lot. And I guess we'll start with the lead. We'll start with Kevin Bacon. And I think he's a guy who, he has such a fascinating career because he's done so much and he's been in every kind of genre. He has done horror, he's done sci-fi, he's done prestige stuff, he's done, which is a great anecdote we'll get to when we get to the second half of this podcast. you know, he's just done everything. So to see him in this kind of like, worm movie is like both weird and kind of perfect at the same time. And he commits to it. Like, he's so funny in it. And he's, you know, the, you know, kind of the aw shucks dumbass redneck, but you know, he's Kevin Bacon. So he still has that like leading man swag.
Yep. Aaron, what are your thoughts on his counterpart?
You know, I'd have to say growing up, I think that Earl was one of my favorites, not because I had anything against Kevin Bacon, but like I was his comebacks, his banter, his lines. Like when I was listening to the lines, I couldn't believe how many lines from this movie I remembered. And so I loved Earl. I thought he was great. I loved the dynamic of the, like, you know, old kind of rugged, been there, done that. Why aren't you listening to me, kid? You know, get your head on straight kind of partnership they had going on.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the chemistry between the two of them is, you know, one for the ages. I mean, it's it's definitely, it's very easy to watch these two in the situations that they're in.
And Fred Ward in that regard is so great because he is like hamming it up. He is so big in this, like, because he, like, Kevin Bacon's trying to have that swag, and then you've got like the first time we see Fred Ward is when he gets rolled out of the bed, and like the look he has, like this wide-eyed ordinary like, what are you doing? Like, yes. That moment maybe sets the tone for not just the movie but the whole damn series, which I know we'll get to.
From there, Earl and Val, they kind of cross paths with all the town people. You've got Mindy, who is our resident pogo record setter. She's actually played by Arianne Richards, who would later go on to be Lex in Jurassic Park. You've got Melvin, the douchebag teenager who likes to bounce his basketball around everywhere. You've got Walter Chang, who owns the local mart, always trying to con Val and Earl out of money. You know, Val and Earl will find something and, hey, I'll give you $20. And they try to bart. It's just a great gag. You've got Nestor, Miguel, Nancy, all these different characters, but I'm going to leave the other ones to my two other co-hosts. We've got Rhonda and then Bert and Heather. So why don't you guys go ahead and take those, split them up however you want.
I'm going to take Rhonda. She was one of my first girl crushes, I realized when watching that. But just, yeah, I love her, right? So, like, you can tell these guys, like, this town is too small for Val. Earl kind of wants to get out of there, but Val is really like, I need to get out. And so when they're driving and they're talking about getting out of the town and what errands they're going to run, and they see that truck in the middle of the desert, and all of a sudden he's like, wait, that new college student, that's supposed to be a girl. And he's like, you know, turns real quick and is going out there, and in his head he's listing all these things he wants this woman to be. And again, this is why I think I resonate with her so hard, right? Like, he's like, I want a blonde. She's got to be tan. She's got to have big boobs. She's got to have long legs, you know, legs that go all the way down. Like, and then he pulls up and he gets Rhonda, and he's kind of like, oh. And she's like, hey guys, I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited. Can you believe these seismographs? And I'm like, oh, I feel you so hard, Rhonda. Even eight-year-old Aaron feels you so hard. 37-year-old Rhonda or Aaron feels you so hard. And she develops into this character that just, like, they really rely on because of her knowledge and because of her smarts and her quick on her feet thinking. And I loved that. And they are, you know, protective over her, and she becomes a real part of the team at the end. I love that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we'll get to this later, but I got some thoughts about the townspeople in general, which maybe we'll get to the criticism / guilty pleasure part of this. But no, the funny part about that is like in that first scene, they just try to like dork her up as much as possible. Like they put like the big like slab of like sunscreen on her nose and like
yeah.
The big floppy hat and like the baggy shorts. Like they're just trying to like make her as like kind of nerdy as they can. And then, you know, over like the course of the movie, she kind of like toughens up, or she's, you know, whatever, becomes a more romantic lead.
She goes from an ugly duckling to a swan.
Yeah. With like, basically all she does is like, she wipes the crap off her nose and puts on pants. Like it's even late. Her pants were removed. Yes. And then she gets a fresh pair in a very, that's one of the scenes that like still is so weird to me. They're like, oh, like we just got to get her pants off randomly, but I digress.
Okay. So, I mean, we've talked about all the characters except for the last two. These are the character, well, one of the characters essentially carries the franchise because, yes, Tremors is a franchise, carries the franchise all the way to where it is, and that is Burt Gummer with his wife, Reba McEntire, a.k.a. Heather Gummer. These are the survivalists with you don't want to cross every bit of ammo in their basement. These guys were probably the coolest people ever. Just the way they talked, it was great. I loved it.
So good.
They hammed it up. Aaron, what are your thoughts on these two?
They were those bug out bagger people before there were bug out bagger people.
Right?
That's 100% true.
They didn't build out a fallout shelter because they didn't know to build one, you know, but they had every gun they could.
Right. No, I of course appreciated, Bert's such a, like, he's such an overkill of a character, and it only gets it only 10x's as the franchise goes on. And so I enjoyed them, and they were obviously a necessary part, but again, like, I loved him and I thought he had great lines, but like, 8-year-old girl me watching it was like, dude, this woman is awesome. Like, you know, she knows the guns just as good or better than he does. Like, and they're just like total badasses.
Yeah.
Really like a very progressive couple when you think about it, despite like them being just like, you know, 50s era paranoia folks. Yeah. Like, 'cause yeah, they do like they're very equal partners in that relationship.
Yeah. Hearing them going back and forth just about guns and like specifics about guns, it's very, very believable. Like, they did a really good job of owning that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree.
And then you got Michael Gross as Bert, who we're going to be talking a lot about Michael Gross in the coming weeks, people. That's a tease. But, what I loved about it, because he was the dad from Family Ties, which,
yes,
for those too young to know, it was an incredibly popular sitcom in the 80s. It launched Michael J. Fox into the stratosphere. It ran for 7 or 8 seasons. Michael Gross finished shooting Family Ties and the very next day arrived to the set of Tremors.
Yep.
That is like he literally moved like from one franchise to another. You know, we could argue which one was more successful, but he's chewing the scenery too. He's like, yeah, way over the top, which he wasn't in Family Ties. He was like kind of this straight-laced dad. So to see that turn is hilarious. And yeah, the parody of these two is just these like massive, like, NRA guns freaks, but like in this time, they, you know, absolutely they were in the right.
It's hard to know, right, if they were like card carrying, if Bert and Heather were like card carrying Republicans or card carrying libertarians. But they want, like, in Family Ties, Michael Gross, the mom and the dad were hippies, so they mm-hmm. were like super contrarian to the, like, Michael J. Fox's character, who was a Republican. So it was just so funny, like, so gentle, so hippie, like, far out parents. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, they're just so, I mean, it's just such a stark contrast. And I can't believe that he goes the next day and then just turns it on. Like, what range?
Yeah, it's great.
Absolutely.
Definitely makes the movie that much better. Okay. So we've talked about the characters. Let's break down our favorite parts about this movie. Because to me, there are so many. I'm going to start off first. I just want to talk about the death of, Fred and, who's the guy?
Edgar.
Edgar. Thank you. Edgar, yeah. You gotta make him climb up this tower and get your fat ass down here. I mean,
oh my God.
You know, for a monster movie, without showing the monster, they did a really good job of building suspense with these first two deaths. With Fred, you actually see him get eaten, but you don't see the monsters again. You see his sheep kind of go crazy, and then all of a sudden he gets pulled down, and his dead body reveal, just his head beneath his hat, was truly frightening. And that, again, that really plays up the movie. You know, that's something that I really enjoyed, because as a horror movie fan and a monster movie fan, you know, it really set the tone for the movie. It started off great with the humor and everything, but then when you get to the creature violence, it really set the tone with these first two discoveries, so to speak.
Edgar's death is so funny to me. Not in like, not in that way, but Edgar's funny because they're driving out and they see him on top of a antenna. And they climb up to get him and he's dead. And like within 2 seconds, the doctor's like, yeah, he died of dehydration.
Yeah. He just knows.
I can just look at him. I look at him and tell you that is one dehydrated son of a bitch. That is. That was my first thing. But it's like, we just, oh, okay. Yeah. We go with it. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. All right. I mean,
that's kind of how it was in the '90s with a family practice physician in the town. Like you just believed whatever they said.
Well, yeah. And my question too, though, Aaron, you're in medicine. Wouldn't you starve to death before you die of dehydration?
No, you dehydrate first. Okay. So, but dehydration takes days to weeks and starvation takes weeks to months.
Oh, fair enough.
Because of your fat stores, you'll live off of your fat stores. A period of time.
I'm going to do you one better, Lou. You know, if he died of dehydration, you know, he was looking rather pale. And if he was up there for 2 or 3 days, you know, wouldn't he be a little sunburned?
He'd have a mat. Yeah, they're in the middle of the desert. Guys, I'm starting to think the science of tremors is shit.
I don't know, seismology.
Conspiracy theory.
Aaron, what are your thoughts?
That to me was... in seeing it, and even still, it's so, I love horror that deals more with suspense and tension than it does the actual gore. So the fact that like the first body they found, it was like so creepy. And of course they're like, I know this guy, and they pull over and then they zoom in on his face. And like 8-year-old me was like, oh my God. Yeah, super freaked out by it. And I mean, even still, like just how it's just like the music, the angles, it's really well done. And Fred too, like with the sheep, of course, again, you know, I've been a vegetarian since I was like 7. So I was like, not the sheep, no animals. eat the people, don't eat the animals. But like, yeah, I just, those were my... All three of the deaths, the mysterious deaths, are pretty awesome because they don't show any gore.
Well, and the interesting thing, a fun fact about this movie is that, you know, everybody knows like the poster of Tremors. I feel like it's kind of, yes. of you know, initially the worms were not supposed to be, the graboid was not supposed to be on the poster. I think the writers and the filmmakers intended on it being like this mystery twist to what these things were going to be, which it absolutely is not when you go to the video store and you see this giant worm on the box or, you know, you see it in the posters or whatever. But it's interesting that I wonder what the reaction would be to somebody who just was like, I have no idea what's going on. There's just some weird thing going on. And then all of a sudden it's these giant ass worms.
I mean, it is still kind of a mystery because those worms on the poster in the box look nothing.
They're just
like
they're
the
just
worms
the
that come out.
They're just the tongues.
With all those teeth? It looks like a tyrannosaur coming out of the damn ground. Or I wonder, were they thinking like people were going to think it was an earthquake movie and they were like, what the hell are we going to do with that?
Yeah, there had to be some type of appeal. And, you know, like you said with the poster, it definitely gives that appeal of Jaws. You know, you see the creature coming up, but it's not the whole creature. So let's talk about, you know, the creature reveal. First, we get the tongue. So these creatures are giant worms, subterranean worms, that have tentacles that shoot out with mouths. I don't know why they have mouths, so they can eat too before they suck you in.
Kind of alien-esque.
Yeah, so they hook you and they pull you into the bigger worm. So we first see these tentacles when Val rips one out of a Tremor's mouth, which I don't know how that's possible.
With the axle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's an avalanche. The two construction guys are dead. They find a helmet with brain matter in it. So they're trying to get away, but the car's stuck. They pull away finally, only to find out that a creature had snatched onto their car. So they thought that this was it. And, you know, we get this reveal later on when they're riding their horses they see the creatures. Sorry, Aaron, another horse death.
I know.
Or another animal death. So, but there's more than one snake around horses, and it's like they're trying to bring it down as they're feeding. And that's when we get the big reveal of a giant sandworm. I don't want to say sandworm because that sounds like too much like Dune. It's a giant worm, subterranean.
It's kind of Beetlejuice-ish without the stripes.
It is, but I mean, but it was a great reveal. I mean, it was, it was very, very. It was right in the middle of the movie. You had our attention. You know, we thought it was the little snakes. It's a bigger snake. Really, really great reveal. It chases after them, which another great practical effect. It shows the fence post moving down, and then the creature's going really fast and knocks itself out. And Fred Ward goes, knocked itself cold. And Kevin Bacon delivers the best line, cold my ass. He's dead. And you, and that to me as a kid, that's the one thing I remember, just that moment, because it's just so funny. So what are your guys' thoughts on how they did this reveal?
I mean, I think it's great, because I think at some point you got to get there. And you know, you talk a lot about Jaws, Ryan. It's a case of, you know, famously the only reason we don't see Jaws until the very end is because the shark looked like garbage. In this case, like, this is kind of like, oh, what would have Jaws been like if the shark had actually looked cool? Because they reveal it so much earlier in the movie so that you can kind of see it and get a little taste of it. And I think it's great. And I also like they do all sorts of fun, different things with it. Like, sometimes you see an above ground shot where you just see the ground move. And then sometimes you're like seeing it from their perspective, and sometimes you're seeing it come at you. Like, it's really creative how they do all of that. And so it's still a lot of fun and kind of, you know, scary, you know, and just engaging.
Yeah. Aaron, thoughts?
Same as Lou. I really love the cinematography of like that panning, like on the ground going shot of getting at that level. I thought it created a great amount of tension where, you know, as the movie goes on, you're like sitting there being like, get off the ground. Cause like you can just, I love it.
Cool. So from there they discover what the worm is. And then Rhonda comes and saves the day, only for them to be stranded on boulders. This is probably the most fun scene in the movie. I'm going to let Aaron talk about this. Just because it's her favorite person.
Oh, I do love her. Gosh. See, the brains pay off, Hollywood. they get stuck on the boulders. So they come out there. They're on the horses. And then she stops by to be like, hey, what's going on, guys? Right. And like kind of talks about, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm kind of battling some flu-like illness, or perhaps it's graboid fever. We don't know. but she comes out there to kind of be like, man, I've been getting all these really weird readings. And they're like, we're stuck. There's these things in the ground killing everybody. And she kind of reveals, okay, there must be three of them. I've gotten three different readings. And they run. They can't get to the car. Do they eat her car?
No, they're on the boulders.
They're on the boulders. Okay, yeah. So they're on the boulders and they're sitting there and they're trying to figure it out, because what they've realized is obviously these things can't go through rock because of how it died in the ditch when it hit head on. So they're like, okay, if we stay up on rocks or solid matter, like it won't get through to us. So Rhonda decides to be like, hey, there's these poles over here in the truck. And so she grabs them and she starts pole vaulting. And they're kind of like, what are you doing?
So smart.
Yeah. And she's like, come on. And they pole vault, you know, all the way on the boulders, because the graboids are getting, as you know, they name them later, are getting smarter and smarter. So they're waiting. Yeah. They're waiting and waiting for them. So they're like, all right, if we stay off the ground, at least they can't get us. And they get all the way to the truck and then make their way back.
Yeah. I mean, again, it leads to great character development between Val and Earl, because they're sitting like, hey, we'll just stay on the boulders. And Earl goes to do it and he just falls backwards. And then Kevin spits on his hands and does it in the first try. So I thought it was great comic relief. So any thoughts on that, that fun moment where we get to know more about the creatures, Lou?
No, I think it's just, like I said, it's that fun moment of just, again, the creativity of, oh, we got to get from one location to the other. And that sets the tone for kind of the rest of the movie.
Well, now, you know, they're back in the town. We have the final assault on the city before they decide to hitch a ride, so to speak, but we'll get to that. you know, and this assault on the town, when we have all the different townspeople, Lou, this is probably where you can talk about all the townspeople. But it's just, it's almost like we're reaching our climax and this is our moment. So Lou, I'll let you go ahead and.
Okay. So here's my question about this town. There are 14 people living in this town. And they make it a point to say, okay, this town is like isolated from everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In a valley.
In a valley. The one doctor that's in the town just moved there.
Yep.
There's no healthcare. There's no schools. There is like a mini mart. But everything else is like, we have children that live here. Where I guess that we can see why Melvin's such a dumbass. He didn't go to school.
Yeah, he probably, honestly, probably didn't. Like, that's not a lie.
No, it's not. Like, I was like, who lives in a town that's in the middle of nowhere, literally? Like, that's 40 miles from anything. Burton Heather. Yeah. Right. And he points that out. The reason they moved there was to be isolated from everything. And so they don't even... Like, they make sense. Everyone else, I don't know what they were thinking. Like, what was Mindy's mom thinking? It's like, oh, this is a great place to raise a child.
I mean, it's homeschooled. Yeah. I don't know. We don't know their backstory. Right.
She's apparently, well, she's got to be homeschooled because there's only 13 other people and no one else there is a teacher.
Right. I mean, I am a city girl, so I could be ignorant to this fact, but I thought that when you get out to like the really rural places, like if you have kids, like not, yeah, maybe people wouldn't want to stay there, but like you have to commute or like a bus will drive like extenuating lengths to pick you up. Is that true? Like where your school districts are not like ours, where there's like these small radius. I'm not disagreeing with you. It makes sense in the movie, but not in real life.
There are like farm communities where, yeah, you like, but a bus comes to get you. But that's the other point is that this town has one road.
Yeah. Right.
That's the other point of it. Like they get like
the cliff. There's a road, a cliff. Mountains, or a cliff.
Right. So it's just, it's baffling to me. That's my biggest beef with the movie is the fact that in order for this movie to work, I get that they've got to be like isolated from everybody because like a helicopter could be able to fly in and movie's over. But like who's choosing to live in Perfection Valley other than like the creepy weirdo isolationist?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how does and if your town only has 14 people in it, how does Chang make money? Because
he's the only convenience store.
He's the only convenience store, but he only has 12 customers at best. Well, that's not sustainable.
It's soon going to be 16 with the new dock, but they get eaten in you know their car gets buried.
I question the economic infrastructure of Perfection Valley. That's what I'm saying.
I think you're right too, Lou. I think you're right too. That was Perfection was bound to fall eventually.
I mean, no wonder Melvin can't buy a decent Laker jersey. He just has to buy a blank one with no numbers on it.
We do see some development in the third movie, but that's after the fact.
Oh yeah, spoilers, man. Come on.
Aaron, any thoughts about the town being overrun by the Graboids?
It just, again, like everything, this movie's great too for anyone who's listening. It's like 90 minutes. So it's easy. It's an easy breeze through. Like you're not spending, it's no Irishman. You're not spending 3 hours watching this. So, you know, I loved it. I thought it was obviously fun to see them all. Like the town is small enough that they're all on their roofs to get away and up because the Graboids get smarter and they start breaking in under the floors. They all have to get up on their roofs and they're testing the boundaries. And then you have Bert and Heather who are up in their commune looking down with the binoculars, kind of being like, what's going on with them? Now all of a sudden everyone's on the roof. You know, they're calling down on the CB radio. And I don't know if anyone else noticed, but that when Kevin Bacon is up on the roof and he gets in, goes inverse.
Yeah.
When he goes inverse to get the CB radio, there's no cord.
Right.
Did you guys notice that? Is that how CB radios work? I don't know.
It's the first cordless phone.
Maybe that's why you guys can't reach anybody.
Maybe battery powered, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I don't know if it was just an error. Yeah, I love those scenes. I think they do a great job of you know the characters enough to know who's a douche and who's not. So when like as people start to get picked off, like you're kind of like, meh, or like, oh no, you know? So I, when they try to all figure it out.
What well, about you, Ryan? Or for me, it's based on the chops of the actor. Because yeah. I, when Nestor dies, it's only like a scene or two later after he has that like, all right, to the screen.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, you can go. You can
gotta
you,
go.
We're done. We're good for you. We're done for the day.
The tribunal has spoken.
For me, probably the most tragic death, probably the most funny death is Walter Chang. When he gets, I'm glad they showed the creature eating someone. Like, you know, I wanted to see see someone going in feet first, whatever. But like watching the graboid comes up through his store and grabs him.
Yes.
And as his hands are flailing in the mouth and the graboid is going back and forth and he's literally smashing Walter back and
like
forth.
A dog.
It's crazy stupid. And I'm laughing so hard. I'm like, oh, it's so sad, but it's so funny.
And even better about that is they have the shot where the graboid grabs his legs. And then the next shot is Walter going, looking up and his nose is bloody.
Yeah,
he's got blood streaming out of his nose. And then all of a sudden it starts and I'm like, thank you. Thank you, 90s special effects. Thank you so much.
So good.
Yes.
All right. We have to talk before we talk of the ending. We have to talk about the most ridiculous part of the movie. Rambo on acid.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Tremor goes to Bert's house because they're making noise and busts through their basement. And he just happens to break in the wrong goddamn brick room. Walls abound full of guns and Bert and Heather just unload their arsenal. It is crazy good. It's the best 3 minutes of your life for this movie. Aaron, what are your thoughts?
One of my favorite parts of that is how they're going back and forth and being at the town and the town is just listening to the shots go off.
Yeah.
Not knowing. Like, I thought that was awesome. And
they
of course it's
dead.
Like, yeah. And I love that you can hear it because, you know, in like the desert, like sound will echo like that. So that's how powerful his guns were too, that you could hear them all the way across. Like, I don't know how far they were, but, I mean, yeah, that whole scene is just out of control and it's, it's awesome.
Lou thought.
Yeah. No, it's insane because it's just an orgy of guns for, you know, for two solid minutes. And it's just showing all of the different weapons that they have. And it culminates in like the elephant gun.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, very educational because, you know, when you watch movies, you only see certain kinds of guns and you don't realize which ones are more powerful than the others. And, you know, here he breaks in and has this, big elephant gun, and that's what does it because all these other guns like don't quite kill them. They make them mad more than anything.
Which writer was the gun enthusiast is what I want to know, because you had to have someone who knew what, like, who was like, let's do this.
Fun fact, well, when they were writing the movie, they got the idea when they were working in the Navy. I think it was Murdoch or whatever his name is, not Wilson. But he got the idea when he was a surveyor and he was on a rock. He goes, what if there was something underneath the ground? You know, and he goes, we'll call it Landshark. Let's write this story. It's literally called Landshark. Well, it was in early development. Lou, your thoughts? I mean, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
No, that was the note that I had. And actually was S.S. Wilson was working for the Navy. He was working in the desert and he thought of that too. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm not going to say that, clearly he's a gun enthusiast at least, or thought it would be funny to, maybe he knows somebody could draw from some form of experience, but clearly somebody writing that script knew a lot about guns. So I'm going to say it was the guy with military experience.
Right. So our townspeople, they realize they have to get out because the creatures are tearing out from underneath their houses. So they get on a big construction cat. And they hook up a trailer to it, and they go around, they pick everybody up. They make for the mountains, the Jeep trail that we keep hearing about, and all of a sudden the Tremors dig a trap. So they make their way to a boulder. We're actually at the point where we start in the movie. This is where we first met Val and Earl, off this cliff. There's a pair of rocks and there's a cliff. Bert brought, homemade bombs. They actually kill a Tremor. And then, as Aaron said, the Tremors get smarter and they suck a bomb in and spit it back out. Unfortunately, it lands where all the other bombs are, so they only have one bomb left. and Val, Earl, and Rhonda are off the rocks and they don't know what to do. So they're like, throw the bomb, buy some time, I don't know. And all of a sudden, Kevin Bacon sprints for it, goes, and it goes to the valley where the cliff is, and he just thought of what happened at the very beginning of the movie, Stampede, and the tremor, the graboid just falls right out of the cliff and onto some rocks and dies. So that's the end of the movie. I should, you know, obviously spoilers. What do you guys think about the ending? Very climactic? I mean, thoughts?
I just remember how when it exploded, when the first time I saw it, it looked like Chef Boyardee.
It really did, like orange.
It still does, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, synthetic canned pasta sauce rubbery noodles inside of it. That's exactly with you know, small chunks of meat.
Yeah. And I mean, again, right. Rhonda comes through and she's like, I don't think these are scaring them. I think they're so sensitive to vibration that it's hurting them. So they have to get away, which Kevin Bacon is like, okay, Val is like, I got a plan. And they all start running. And I love the sound effect. It's like this strange scream that they like kind of do on repeat, like two or three times.
Yeah.
As the graboid like flies out of the cliff. I love the slow, like the panning, like close to Kevin Bacon's face. Like as if, you know, it's a standoff, it's chicken. And then of course the line as it flies out, can you fly, you sucker? Can you fly?
Okay, side note here. This movie was originally rated R, and it was rated R for language. So that really was, can you fly, take the S off and put an F on there. So, yep.
Yeah.
My mom ears must have heard sucker on Saturday night.
It was there. They edited it all out.
Edited it.
The only F word is when he goes, F you. But it was supposed to be rated R for language.
Yeah,
you know,
there was
actually. The truth is, my father would have rented it for me anyway, whether it was PG-13 or R.
Yeah, and when they call the graboids mother humpers. That again mother is humpers. Also, if you watch and this again, the benefit of HD these days is you can see it clearly dubbed over Kevin Bacon's face. Yep. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It might have been too steamy in the hot tub for you to notice that one air.
It was. That's true. I couldn't. Or I think I was just so married to Mother Hubbard.
But that's such a weird choice too, that this thought like this movie, and maybe again you got a guy from you know swears like a sailor and he's writing this movie, and I was like, this movie feels like if it were rated R would just feel out of place.
It would, yeah, like, definitely different vibe.
Yeah.
So that's gonna wrap it up. I mean, we've talked about the movie, so you know, definitely a flashback, but now we're entering into a realm where we have six sequels. They're currently filming Tremors 7, but this is where we enter the realm of it being a guilty pleasure. If you watch the first one, you like the other ones, you have to see the other one, and at this point is a guilty pleasure. So I'm gonna turn it over to Lou because he is our resident expert when it comes to guilty pleasures.
Yeah. So for those who haven't caught on yet, yeah, this is the first part of a three-part series. We're not done. We're going to talk. We're going to run the entire franchise. Ryan wanted to do this for flashback for Tremors, and I was like, well, if you're going to have me on for Tremors, we're going to talk. I'm going to make you talk about the whole damn series. So we are now we're going to run the series, not tonight. We're going to talk about Tremors 2 in just a minute. And then we're going to have a part two where we're going to talk about Tremors 3 and 4. We're going to have a part three where we talk about Tremors 5 and 6. And then eventually when Tremors 7 comes out, I'm sure we'll revisit it. But so here's the backstory. So Tremors comes out in 1990, and it's a big hit on video. It doesn't make a lot of money, as we talked about in the theater, but it makes a lot of it's a huge renter. Yep. So there's talk of a sequel right away. And so they get kind of the green light and they get some money to make a sequel right around 1995 or 1994. And the original plan was to have all of the main characters return for the original. Two problems. First off, Reba McEntire, because she's a country star by day, apparently, little known fact. she was embarking on a world tour. And so she couldn't do the film. And then Kevin Bacon passed on Tremors 2 so that he could go do Apollo 13.
Oh, I am very happy with that choice. As an Apollo 13 lover.
But let me pose that. We'll pose this question. I think we'll get it. We'll put a pin in that. I'm gonna leave that in your ear for a minute. But so, having lost their lead, the budget gets slashed from $16 million all the way down to $4 million. So the only
and it shows.
So the film still gets made. Fred Ward comes back. Michael Gross is back. They're the only two returning cast members from the original film. And then because the budget was so low and also because they didn't, you know, Fred Ward didn't have maybe the star power that Kevin Bacon does, it decides it's going to be a direct to video release. And that statement immediately dates it and lets you know we're right in the middle of the 90s, because nothing says 90s like direct-to-video movies, which is, again, one thing that if you haven't learned before, like Netflix and Hulu and all these streaming services, like, made good movies for their streaming services. If your movie in the 90s was direct-to-video, it was for this movie sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were like, we couldn't release this in the theater. And so here we go. We have Tremors 2 Aftershocks, released in 1996. The plot is that Earl, who is now living by himself in a trailer, is called back into action to fight a series of graboids that are terrorizing a Mexican desert. He is hired to kill each one, and we'll get $50,000 if he does so. So he recruits a new sidekick, and he embarks on hunting some graboids. But we learn that the graboids have a few tricks up their sleeves, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. So just to give you some context, the first Tremors actually is fairly well received. It has an 88 Rotten Tomato score, 7.1 IMDb score. We have no Rotten Tomato score for Tremors 2, as it's a direct-to-video release, but its IMDb score drops all the way to a 6. So that puts it right in the Guilty Pleasures wheelhouse. So let's get into this. I know when we talked about this movie before, we talked about if we were going to do more than one Tremors. You both had at least seen Tremors 2 prior to this, but having to see it for this podcast. Is that correct, Ryan?
I've seen them all. Seen them all before I had thoughts of this podcast. It is definitely a guilty pleasure.
All right.
I had seen pieces of it, and I just watched it in entirety today. And I'm here for it. I'm here. You know me and the guilty pleasures. I saw Cats the day it came out. I'm here for
it. That's right. So good. I'm glad. No, yes. I do remember this was one of those things a buddy and I rented in high school. We had nothing else to do. I was like, we'll give Tremors 2 a shot.
Yeah.
You know, and it met our expectations. I'll say that at least, because, you know, when you got a direct to video movie, you were not expecting much. And if you did, that's on you. If you picked up some straight to video movie and thought it was going to be good, you played yourself. So.
Yeah. This has like USA Up All Night, TNT, like 2 a.m. Cinemax, 1 a.m., like written all over it.
You and I were watching very different things at 1 in the morning, but in the 90s. But that's
my
okay.
Parents gave me a lot of freedom. More than I should have probably had. But.
All right. So let's talk about Fred Ward. So he's now going from being kind of the sidekick to maybe the lead in a very, very Blues Brothers 2000-esque move, where the star is gone and so now the sidekick has to take over. How do we think Fred Ward acquits himself as the star of this film? What do you think, Aaron?
I mean, right out the gates, he's in for the cheese. Like, he has that straight, like, he commits. Like, he knows this is home straight to video. And so I think he's a good lead, but he's no Burt Gummer. And he's no Val McKee, but he plays the role. I think, you know, he's trying to resurrect his, like, you don't know what you're doing, kid. You don't know what you're into, kind of cautionary, like old geezery, honorary guy. But he commits to the cheese as well.
Yeah. You know, Ryan, how about you? Any thoughts on Fred Ward?
When you said commit to the cheese, I think of one moment in particular, but I mean, he is playing a character that he's played before and, you know, he still plays it really, really well. You know, with teaching the kid how to play rock, paper, scissor, and, you know, kind of goofing him on that. But, you know, just being resigned to knowing what he knows. This is a guy who lost his opportunity to get a fortune, and instead he's raising ostriches. So that's pretty funny.
He got Walter Changed.
Right.
By someone other than Walter Chang, that's for sure.
Right. But no, like, it's almost like he's old man, you know, like he wants to do it, but he doesn't want to do it. He just wants the money. And the best part, my favorite part about this whole movie is when they're stranded and after the worm's term, I guess is a good way to say it. But he goes, I'm not going anywhere without that Seismo. So you see, it's Grady, right? Grady's sitting there holding all the guns and he's just walking with the Seismo monitor. And I go, yeah. That's what Earl would do. And you know, you say he goes for the cheese, and I just think of this one moment when they go to the car and it's all smashed up, and they see the hands, and Earl goes, like, whole different ball game, whole different ball game. I'm like, oh, ease it down a bit, bud, ease it down. But, I mean, it's just fun. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I'm glad he joined it, but, I mean, it's definitely for the cheese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned the other person that's back in this, Aaron, is Michael Gross and Bert. And I think we're going to see, because this is also, this is the last time we'll see Fred Ward in the Tremors franchise, and it will go become a Michael Gross-led franchise where you do kind of feel like there is that passing of the torch or usurping a little bit, because mm-hmm. my favorite moment of the movie, and like I still remembered when I saw it, back in the day of thinking, oh, now I'm in on this movie, is the moment where he calls Bert and they're like, we got a problem. And Bert's like, what kind of a problem? And he's like, a graboid problem. And Bert just like sits up in his chair with the dramatic music. I'm like, oh, it's going to be this. Good.
Yes.
Done. Done. Stamp it. I'm in. Like, and he's the one who like is he now has to be the, like, he has to dial it up because Fred Ward has to dial it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just have to say my favorite line from him is just, he's always like, adequate information. I am completely out of ammo. Just hamming it up.
Yes. He's mm-hmm. another one. He commits to 10Xing the character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the two returnees. So let's talk a minute before we start getting into strengths and weaknesses of the film at all. So mm-hmm. kind of replacing Kevin Bacon as the partner in crime of Fred Ward is Chris Gartin, who plays his character. Where's his character's name here?
Brody.
Brody, thank you. You know, he's great value, Kevin Bacon. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he returns and he's like all gung ho to be around Fred Ward, which is funny because they show, and they do a nice job at least of connecting these two movies together about how, you know, Fred Ward's character was a celebrity for a hot minute. And then it all just kind of went downhill. And then, so like they get on both the cover of People and National Geographic. Mm-hmm. Which is something they joked about in the film.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, hey, that was a nice, when you're watching these movies back to back, it really does connect with one another.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, so any, and then also the love interest, because Finn Carter is not in this movie. I have an anecdote about Finn Carter later on, but Finn Carter's not back in this movie. She is replaced for a love interest for Fred Ward and played by Helen Shaver. She plays a geologist or a She's a geologist, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a geologist.
Okay. She's a geologist. She's another science type, but this time is a form, also a former Playboy model.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Aaron, I think you seem like you have thoughts on that.
I didn't connect to Kate like I did to Rhonda. Yeah, I'll just say that. I feel like, I mean, I don't know this actress, but it's like, maybe it's hard to 10X a character or character traits of a lead, like if it's not the same character. So like, I feel like with her, they really tried to make her like overtly nerdy again and like so excited, but also left her, I guess, not as helpful. And then it also too, it was like, I'm a Playboy model. I'm like, oh, there you are, 90s. There you are at home video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got to agree. I think the one thing that you got to say about the first movie is cheesy and it's B movie, but it's at least filled with some really kind of A-list talent. And this one, not so much. Let's just say that, these are no good replacements for Kevin Bacon and Reba McEntire.
Yes, agreed.
Okay, so let's get into some scenes of the movie. I guess we'll start with this. The big twist of the film is that, yes, the Graboids evolve, and they evolve in an odd way in which they now start to give birth. Metamorphosize into something else?
These shriekers is what they're mm-hmm. called. They're in the large worms and they bust out. So it's almost like Alien, but you don't see them ever bust out. Mm-hmm. When they bust out, you can see the three sacks that they were in.
So did the Graboids always have this ability?
Yes.
Okay. Kate did have it as a discovery that the geologist had a discovery that the species must be hermaphrodites. So they can reproduce without sexual intercourse or sexual reproduction. So to be honest, I don't know exactly how that works in nature, so I can't comment if it's accurate or not.
If you watch more of the movies too, every movie is part of the life cycle. It literally goes into the life cycle as the movies go on. So when you watch the third, you see the next cycle. And then from the third movie, you see how in fact they're eggs. And then from eggs, they hatch into little worms and then big worms. And then you go into the shriekers.
Oh, this is interesting. Cause I saw, like when I was watching this, I specifically wrote down in my notes, like major evolutionary flaws.
Yeah.
There's a life cycle. These shriekers. Okay.
Well, because
I thought out.
Well, because the thing about the shriekers, they just basically like they turn into like these smaller versions that can walk. So they're not underground. So that's like a plus. But they're also way smarter and smaller and easier to kill.
Yeah.
Like and that's the big weird thing about this movie is that the first movie has like that tension of you can't go anywhere because they're under the ground. And the second one, they're like, nope, they're not out of the ground. They're just little tiny, like wild hogs running all over the place.
Right. But
these guys, these shriekers are almost what they're the needed thing to, if this race of super worms ever were to take over, it's because of the shriekers, because shriekers can, once they eat food, they hack up a new one. And then that new one, if more it eats, it hacks up a new one. And then that of course would lead to the third part of the evolution cycle, which we're not going to go there yet. But for every one for when they eat, they hack up a new one. So, I mean, they go from one. So if there's three spit out another one, that's six makes 12.
And so, what they lose in effectiveness, they make up for in volume.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Gotcha. That's accurate. So, okay. So they're just basically like lobbyists.
To reproduce. Sorry.
Well, and like what they lose in effectiveness, they gain in volume, I think describes the franchise, Phil.
Right.
Phil, Lou.
So this is, in a way, they're like doing a meta commentary on what's about to come. We're going to keep reproducing these.
You keep eating them up, you're getting more.
Yep. There will be no sex involved.
I think
exactly.
No one is having sex watching or making these films.
Exactly.
But yet we're going to keep, they're somehow still going to keep existing.
And at this point they're like, how can we have there be like a lot of them? So it's a big problem at the end of the movie. Here we go. They'll burp one up after they eat.
Cause how are you going to explain those things mating?
Right.
I get that. Yeah. I mean, you put yourself in a pickle.
What's funny though, is this is written by Murdoch and Wilson again. So.
Right.
Yeah. They come back and Wilson directs this version.
Yep.
Ron Underwood has moved on. He,
goes on. Once you have.
Yeah. 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 I'll let the listener decide which is the upgrade. but along the way, you know, he directs City Slickers, he helps Jack Palance get an Oscar, so you know, he's got a little bit of cachet. At least no one won an Oscar for Tremors, we can say that for damn sure.
Which is
appalling, by the way.
Agreed. Those special
best supporting
effects.
Actor for, you know, for Michael Gross,
right?
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go around here and let's talk about some. So we mentioned that's kind of the crux of it. So any scenes or moments from the movie that you really want to dive into, Aaron? Let's start with you.
I guess apparently in my notes, like as I was reading this, I focused a lot on the babies. I was like, wow. Okay. Key scenes in the movie. If this movie didn't, I don't know, is it able to really generate the tension that the first one does now that you kind of know what it is? It doesn't really, I don't think it even really does that with the shriekers, but at the same time, I do appreciate all of their efforts with the fancy, and I use this in air quotes, fancy CGI for the shriekers as they're running around and they're using green screens and they're doing whatever. But, I love the scene when Bert comes back. I love that sit up, like where he sits forward and is like, huh? And he's excited about it. It's like, this is just what this film needs, is Bert Gummer. And I love that he's a little bit like in several scenes, the joke where they're kind of looking at something ridiculous he's done, where he's put them in a little bit more danger. And he's like, how was I supposed to know? Like, I didn't have the information. Like, what the heck? And it happens a couple of times.
Yeah.
This movie does the best it can with what it's got to work with. Oh no, Lou, are you muted? There you are.
Yeah. I feel like we're in a weird bridge with this movie because they wanted, when they wrote this movie, they wanted to make it a theatrical release. And so you can kind of see like the remnants of it there, like the character development and all that sort of stuff. And then they have like the shriekers and like this kind of like the B movie aspect of it that kind of comes into play with Michael Gross. But it's like not like one or the other. It's like this weird, it itself is this weird metamorphosis of some sort of, you know, new creature that we're not quite sure what to do with.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan, how about you? Any scenes or moments that you want to point out?
For me, you know, I really enjoyed the reveal of the shriekers. They had just discovered that the radio tower was eaten, and all of a sudden, you know, they hear a clatter and they're like, oh God, this is big. And they've got their guns trained down low. And as it's getting closer and they hear more noise, they're going higher and higher. And then this little thing comes strolling out and they're like, oh, and what I liked is you saw that it had like this pod on its head that lifted up. It's like sensors. And we go from subterranean monsters that, can hear and feel vibrations to creatures that pick up heat. And that's kind of their thing. And they shriek when they, you know, to call others that, hey, we got food. So, I mean, I thought that was really cool. But one scene for me is, you know, well, I should say two, is just, it involves Bert, you know, besides the whole, I am completely out of ammo. Like you were saying, how did I know, or I wasn't prepared. There's that scene where they see all the shriekers and he hops into the bulldozer, tool at the end, and he's stuck in there and they're like, how are you doing down there, Bert? And he goes, oh, I'm just dandy.
He spends a good amount of time sleeping in that bulldozer and he doesn't even care. He's like, okay.
But a thing for me, and just really shows the characterization of Bert, is he's got that giant sniper rifle and he uses it to kill one shrieker and he ends up killing the car. It goes all the way through the wall, through all the machinery, and hits the engine. And it's just, it's classic Bert. It's just so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they figure out, you know, ultimately, and this is where I get to that whole point of they're kind of, this reminded me more of the Shriekers, of Gremlins. And particularly like Gremlins 2, because they figure out ways, Gremlins 2, they figure out a way to multiply so quickly that, mm-hmm. you know, ultimately you have like this whole lobby that's filled with Gremlins, and you kind of have a scene like that at the end too, where they just keep eating and throwing up and eating and throwing up, and they're like multiplying until eventually like they blow up the whole building to kill them all. But that's only like the second half of the movie. The first half is just like this kind of montage of like Earl going on this random graboid killing spree.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is the other thing that's baffling, because in the first one, they're like, oh, there's these things that we've never heard of before. No one knows, but there's four of them. But then like we cut to a couple of years later and all of a sudden there's like dozens of them in this one rando section of Mexico.
Yeah.
Like at one point, Brody, or Earl tells Brody, I can't remember which one, but he's like, oh, we've killed at least 28 of the graboids, not the shriekers.
Right. Yeah.
So the graboids were just like chilling in Mexico this whole time?
Yep.
Yeah.
I guess it's wherever the eggs were laying, because in the fifth one, which we'll get to, they're in another continent altogether.
Well, they are prehistoric, so who knows?
Yeah.
Pangea, you know what I'm saying?
And here's the thing. If that's the other thing that really, you know, it challenged my belief system in a little bit here, because if they are prehistoric, they were here before we were. We're just invading their turf. Like, who are we? They kind of have a point here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I might be Team Graboid. I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking this through. Like, you know, they kind of have a point.
Yeah.
We're just in here drilling for oil where if they've been living peacefully all of this time. And the only thing that really kind of pissed him off was the fact. And by the way, in the first one, what really like sets them off is when people are drilling in the mountains. Right.
Yeah.
It's all those fracking vibrations. This whole movie, this whole series is an anti-fracking allegory.
We figured it out.
Cracked it, people.
Lou's going to contact S.S. Wilton and be like, listen, we got to make a definitive Tremors. Tremors 9, Revenge.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just go after a bunch of frackers.
Yep.
And they'll call them frackers to keep it PG-13.
Right.
So they're called out by this guy. That was the other thing, is there's this guy that would look just like, you know, everybody here just looks like kind of a knockoff of everything else, which is like a standard, like direct to video. Like he's recruited by this guy who looks like John Turturro's like stunt double.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He so does.
I'm like, oh, it was like for a second I was like excited. I was like, I don't remember John Turturro. Oh, no, it's not him. He's not in this movie.
And then he gets eaten with the stupidest special effects ever.
Mm-hmm.
Leg in the mouth.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
So bad.
Home to video. Like, I just wonder with the home to video stuff, like, do you just think there's a door that someone opens up and there's like the home to video people are sitting there, like the special effects guy and the composer and the screen, you know, play person being like, you, we're doing a home to video movie and we need this to be ridiculous. So suit up, guys.
It's home to video time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, at that time, that's what it felt like in the 90s, that it was like all these direct-to-video movies were...
Such a formula.
Yeah. And then, yeah, because they were like, okay, it was like basically all the rejected scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we don't, okay, we've got this script. We can't, we don't want to put a lot of money into it, but man, my, okay, we just put it straight out to video and we'll make a couple of bucks off of it.
A lot of it too is franchise sequels. Like I just think of, you know, Hellraiser and things like that. They were just made specifically for direct to video and people ate it up. People, I mean, they kept getting them because that's why they kept making more. It, I don't know.
Sure.
Well, I mean, yeah.
When you only spend like $4 million on a movie, you can you do have a good shot of making your money back, at least on the home. That's how big the home video market was back in the days. You make, I mean, it would turn movies that were unsuccessful in the theaters into big hits.
And if you had a cult following like Tremors had after it left the theaters with the home video market, you've got your market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I will say, just to circle back to this, Aaron, I challenge, you said earlier you are glad that Kevin Bacon make that choice. I'm gonna push back on this because here's my question to you. If you had replaced Kevin, is Kevin Bacon so vital to Apollo 13 that you couldn't just replace him with some other kind of like, you know, semi A-list, good-looking guy, and kept Kevin Bacon in Tremors 2 and had like an honest to goodness sequel to this movie?
That's
damn it, Lou.
Good question.
This might be checkmate. this is a great question because now I'm racking my brain because you're right. Like, I don't know why. I mean, of course, I loved their chemistry in Apollo 13, and Apollo 13 is like my. I hold a very special place in my heart. But you're right. Like, he may have been able to be replaced by somebody else. And I'm going to think long and hard about that. I am. I'm going to give that one a thought.
I'm trying to think. If it's 1994, some kind of starry, I don't know, you could have gotten, I don't know, one of the Coreys could have gotten.
Yeah, I know.
He was busy doing speed.
Let's start playing Tetris and jigsaws with all the 90s stars, but I'm going to think about it. Like who could I have gotten in there to play Jack Swigert?
All right. So you guys, in the comments section, let us know what you think. Who could have replaced Kevin Bacon in Apollo 13 to free him up to have done Tremors 2? Mm-hmm. But okay. All right. So, any other scenes or moments from Tremors 2? I don't want to get, I think we need to give the first one, maybe it's due time. I don't think we need to give equal time to Tremors 2 for this episode. We got a lot more to get into with the series, but any other scenes or moments so we don't leave any stone unturned for Tremors 2?
For me, it's, you know, just a lot of the comedy, you know, this movie did not take itself seriously. You know, Aaron mentioned Bert saying, I didn't know, or I didn't have adequate information. You know, Bert comes prepared with all the MREs and that's what the Shriekers end up eating to multiply so much. But I really enjoyed how they did get rid of all the Shriekers at the end. You know, Earl going, I just set a bomb, and Bert's like, we need to go. We need to go as far.
Oh, so ridiculous.
It was so ridiculous. It didn't take itself seriously, but I mean, it just fit the character so well. I did enjoy the ending.
All right, Aaron, how about you?
And what 90s home to video or 90s action movie for that matter didn't include a shot of somebody standing too close to an explosion and jumping.
Getting blown
face
away.
First, like doing the turn. The like turn blow away into a ditch or into wherever the street, a lawn, like you had to have that in there. So I love that like Brody was just kind of a dope, like a real excited dope, like the whole way through all the way to the end. I had a lot of questions about this movie, but ultimately I would say, you know, I'll tell you, it's really creative.
Well, and so much so, here's by the way, both a compliment to the film, but also to give you context of what we're talking about when we talk about direct to video, is that when this movie came out, it actually was pretty well reviewed at the time because of those expectations of direct to video, where it's actually considered one of the best direct-to-video movies of all time.
Preach.
I love that.
It is. It was considered so good it might have deserved a theatrical release.
I love
I'm not
that.
I'm not gonna go that far, but yeah, the fact that, you know, this is the bar, people. This is where we're at.
This is where it's been set to.
Yep. All right.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. So I do want to get into some trivia, just for both Tremors 1 and 2. So, so some quick trivia for Tremors 1. We talked a lot about Michael Gross. We're going to talk a lot more about him in the future. He was actually not who the role was written for. The original roles of Bert and Heather were written for Chuck Norris. Was Bert and I have my wrong notes.
Linda Hamilton.
Thank you. Chuck Norris and Linda Hamilton were the inspiration for Bert and Heather for Tremors.
I wish, like, it would have been a different movie, but I wish.
We needed that Sarah Connor energy in Tremors.
My mind is like, it's liquefying as we talk about this. I can't
I'm
even believe
here
it.
Chuckling to myself. No.
And Chuck Norris certainly would have been down for the direct-to-video sequels.
He sure would have, yeah.
That dude.
He cornered the market.
He did. Okay. The one person we didn't talk a lot about is we didn't talk about Finn Carter. Aaron, I know you talked a lot about Finn Carter, but we haven't. We don't hear much from her after this. She does not have a great career after this. In fact, her most recent claim to fame, was being arrested last year in Las Vegas for possession of a stolen vehicle.
And I think 14 credit cards.
Correct. Yes. 14 counts of possessing a credit card without the consent of the card or of the card holder. Yes.
Oh my gosh. How sad.
Yeah. So, you know, not great. Probably they probably should have called her back for Tremors 2.
Those royalties on the first Tremors weren't enough, huh?
They were not.
So, all right. So let's take both of these to the guilt meter. On a scale of 1 to 5 shame spirals, 1 being, you love this movie, you need everybody to see this movie, all the way to number 5 to saying you either hated this movie or it's, if you do like this movie, you're not going to show it to anybody. Where does Tremors and Tremors 2 fall on the guilt meter? Let's start with Aaron.
Tremors is a definite 1. Everybody should see Tremors. It's a fabulous 90s horror suspense film. And it's very smart and well done. Tremors 2, I'm going to say 3. I don't have a lot of shame when it comes to these movies. I think it's fun. It's, if you want to get, like you said, put in context the ridiculousness of what the home market was, see it.
All right. And Ryan, how about you?
Definitely agree with the 1 for Tremors. Definitely a great movie. You need to see it. It is in and of itself, you know, a 90s film, but it is a great monster comedy. It doesn't rely solely on the horror. It is a comedy. And if you like comedies, I recommend this movie. For Tremors 2, I'm going to say 1.52. This is definitely a sequel that lives up to the original. It doesn't take itself too seriously like the first one. It still kind of has that monster effect, but it kind of goes into the realm of crazy towards the latter half. But definitely a 1 point. Just knowing what I know of the Tremors franchise, definitely a 1.52.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. I'm a 1 for the original Tremors. I think you absolutely need to see it. It holds up if you haven't seen it in a minute.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing about it, was that it doesn't, like so many movies from that era, the special effects are cheesy and dated. And these were cheesy at the time, so it's fine. So it works really well. For Tremors 2, I'm going to go right in the middle. I'm going to do a 2.5 because I feel, now I haven't seen the rest of the movies yet, but I feel like we're at a tipping point of these movies going from kind of goofy to just batshit insane. This movie just isn't quite on that. So I'm hedging a little bit and saying I'm going to go 2.5 because I do think there's some fun to be had in it. But there's also just some clear, we couldn't get the original people. So here are these carbon knockoffs that it's kind of hard to shake. Kevin Bacon's presence is sorely missed.
Oh yeah.
But so that's going to do it for the end of the Fred Ward era of Tremors, but that's not going to do it for our coverage of Tremors. As I said earlier, we're going to now, this is part one of a 3-part series. So we're going to be doing a following up either next month or maybe in April with Tremors 3 and 4. Michael Gross takes over the franchise and we're off to the races. So six of these movies, by the way, if you want to follow along, are available right now on Netflix. So I encourage you to go back, watch those movies, watch these other ones with us, and come back next month so you can hear us talk about it. But we've got all sorts of stuff coming up for you on the Front Row Network. We are out of Oscar season, so we're going to be back with our regular slate of shows. Flashbacks is back. Guilty Pleasures is back. I know March is coming up, so we're going to have March Madness coming up. We're going to have another of our famous bracket battles. Which bracket we're going to go to, we're going to leave it a surprise. So the way you can find out about that and be participating in that bracket is by following us on Facebook, the Front Row Network, or following us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with the Z. You can also catch all of our shows wherever you get your podcast, on Apple, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, NPRIllinois.org. And by the way, I issued this challenge on the last Guilty Pleasures, but if you are one of our new Spotify listeners, and we thank you for being one, you share that link on Twitter. Make sure you tag me at the fake Lou Hare and request a movie for Guilty Pleasures. We're going to do it because we're willing to take on anything you got. So we appreciate you listening and sharing this podcast and helping us build this community of people who like watching, you know, Shrieks and Graboids and Fred Ward doing silly stuff. So Ryan, what else you got coming up for Flashbacks?
So Flashbacks, we're going to, you know, hop back on for this and do the Guilty Pleasures. We're going to do our, you know, Flashbacks. We always rank our movies in our franchise. So when we're done, we'll talk about that. But next month, I figure I keep with the times and what's going on with the news. And we are going to have a flashback with Outbreak, starring Morgan Freeman and Cuba Gooding Jr., Rene Russo, Dustin Hoffman, to kind of combat with the coronavirus. And then in April, we've got No Time to Die coming out. So we are going to flash back to 1994, or was it 6? I don't know. Pierce Brosnan's first take as James Bond with GoldenEye.
All right. Fantastic. Aaron, you got anything you want to let us know about?
I believe I am going to be doing some C2E2 coverage at the end of the month. I'm not sure what day yet. So if any of the listeners have any questions, if you look at the lineup, if you look at any of the panels or any of the, the vendors, and you guys have any questions or you want to know things, you know, I'm kind of new at this and I'm open to hearing what the listeners would like to have answered, would like to see. Maybe I do a Facebook Live, maybe I do I go out live on Instagram. And so there will be more on that when I know more details.
Awesome. Well, great. And one last thing, if you go to our website, NPR on nprillinois.org or frmpod.com, you can see a whole host of articles that I've had that I've been working on. I did a postmortem on why I think The Irishman went 0-4-10 and became the only Best Picture nominee this year to not win a single award. I had my thoughts on that. I also have an article coming out called Why We'll Never Stop Fighting About Star Wars. And of course, the long-awaited top 10 guilty pleasures of the last decade. So all sorts of stuff for your ears, your eyes, whatever. We got you covered. So make sure you stay dialed in with us. And as always, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you thought of the first two Tremors movies. And stay tuned for everything else we got coming up. But until next time, for the Front Row Reviews, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Ryan Lutens.
And I'm Aaron McCabe.
And as always, we'll see you in Front Row.